Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome. Well, coming up today, if you're struggling to lose those winter pounds, as am I, don't think calories, think insulin, says Dr. Charles Wynn. I'll introduce him in just a moment. And if you're looking for a new job and the thought of interviewing brings you out in hives, we have two really great books to help ease your stress and bring you closer to getting a resounding yes from the hiring manager. And we'll end today's show with The Power of Storytelling. These days, you know, you can't really be successful in business and even in aspects of your personal life if you don't know how to tell your story in a compelling and engaging way. And we have the perfect film and branding expert to tell us how to get it right. His new book is called The Hook, and he will join us about 12:40 today. But first, let me introduce my first guest. He is Dr. Charles Wynn. He's the medical director at the Laufen Medical Weight Loss Clinic. He's won many, many, many professional awards, including the 2010 Orange County Physicians of Excellence Award. And that same year, he was awarded the Orange Coast Magazine Best Physician recognition. He has extensive research, clinical experience, teaching and training in psychiatry, and offers a unique perspective to help his patients lose weight. His work has appeared in many various journals, and he speaks frequently at conferences. And he's written with his brother and co-author a great new book called The Thinsulin Program, The Breakthrough Solution to Help You Lose Weight and Stay Thin. Dr. Charles Wynn, welcome.
Well, thank you, Vicki. I'm glad to be on the show, and good afternoon to all your listeners today.
Well, this is an interesting program, and I am definitely going to try this myself because when I look for, you know, we receive a lot of books on nutrition and diet programs and stuff, so I'm always looking for, you know, what's based in science, what's proven to work, what's has common sense attached to it, and what is realistic living, you know, for us day to day. And I think this book falls into those parameters. But let's just begin with a little bit more of your background. You specialize in psychiatry, so you specialize in behavior modification to help people lose weight. Your brother, tell us what he does.
My brother, actually, he's a bariatric internist. He's his specialty is internal medicine. He's been treating obesity for the last 16 years.
Okay, and his name is Tusong An Nguyen.
Yes, Tu Nguyen. We call him Tu, yes.
Tu, okay, Tu Nguyen. And so together you developed this program. So tell us how you started working together on this.
You know, it's interesting because in psychiatry, we have a lot of medications that simply cause a lot of weight gain, even though it was successful in treating the psychosis or the bipolar and the depression. But so I independently was treating weight, doing weight management on my own. My brother has always had three clinics really working to help thousands of patients already in trying to lose weight. And so at family dinners, we were talking because we realized that this obesity epidemic that we're seeing, not just in the United States, can you imagine about 70% of Americans meet the criteria for either overweight
or obesity.
And the adolescent obesity rate is just getting out of control. So as we were talking about this, we realized that even though a lot of what he does was on the biology of insulin to burn fat, and a lot of what I do was on the not only the behavioral therapy, but also the cognitive thinking, the CBT, the cognitive behavioral therapy, to kind of help change that. Even though we were doing it independently, we realized that maybe the missing point is that we have to combine both. That's why I think the merger between what we do, the body and the mind, you know, not just between two brothers, but by really harnessing the synergy between the body's ability to burn fat and the mind to change your eating behavior. This is where we thought it would be the most successful, and we are correct.
Yeah.
Based on the programs that we did, over 12,000 patients that we have tried the concept of insulin, and we have actually had great success with this program.
Well, you say that, you know, most diet programs tell you to change your way of thinking and ultimately your eating habits. And it doesn't work because it's like telling a negative person to be positive. You have to have the tools. And this is what your book is all about. But you say the Thinsulin program isn't just another diet. It's actually based on scientific evidence, psychotherapy principles, and teaches us how to apply the biological principles of insulin to burn fat and lose weight. And I just want to stop there for a moment, because when I first read that, I thought that sounds kind of complicated, that I have to learn to apply the principles of insulin, but it's actually very simple the way you've laid it out.
Absolutely. I think you hit it right on the head when you said, you know, all the diet programs, the crux of every single successful diet out there, from Atkins to Paleo to Barry Sears, low glycemic index, or even bariatric surgery, you have to drink high protein, low carb shakes prior to doing this. Excuse me. So, do you know what the common thread is for all those? It ultimately lowers insulin. Mm-hmm. But yet, none of these diets, none of these programs out there teach you about insulin. Because the first word that I think about when my brother told me this, and I said, "Oh, that's for diabetics, right? That's for people with diabetes," but not really. Let me show you the science for your listeners for a second.
Yes, please.
When you eat sweeter carbs, that will break down to sugar. Your pancreas will produce insulin to bring down that blood sugar. That's why we always associate diabetes and insulin. But what we don't realize, and this is actually what I learned in medical school, I had to remember that when he mentioned this, is that when you increase your insulin because you eat all those sweets and carbs, it forces your fat cells to store every one of those calories as fat, and it prevents your body from burning fat. So as you were adding more fat, you can't burn it. You're adding more fat, you can't burn it. Guess where it goes? Everywhere in your body, but especially your hips, your thighs, and your stomach. That's why we see a lot of that fat distribution. The good news is if we do the opposite, let's say if we go on a diet and we try to starve ourselves, right? We go on Atkins, whatever diet may be,
right,
that we want to go on, and we choose foods that are higher in protein and lower in carbs and stay away from sweets, guess what we're doing? We're actually lowering our insulin level because our body doesn't have to produce as much insulin. So over time, it takes about 3 weeks for this to occur. It doesn't occur immediately. So what this means is if you cheat when you're on a diet, remember how you go to a grocery store and you see all these little advertisements on the newsstand, right?
Right.
Oh, you can cheat and you can lose weight.
Right.
You do that. You did it at home already. Did you ever see any results? You're just going to go right back where it is, because every single time that you spike your insulin, it takes 3 more weeks to bring it down. It slows you down that much. So this is why it's so important that when you decide to, what we call the active phase, is to lower your insulin, maximize that. You have about 4 months before your body will fight and win, and then you will plateau and get stuck. So during that 4 months, if you just try to lower as best as you can to keep your insulin low and allow your body to burn fat, you're going to be able to lose at least 3 to 5 pounds in the first week and about 5% every month. You know, the maximum you can lose is approximately 20% in about 4 months.
Wow.
If you don't cheat and you actually stay on that. But if you do here and there, right, you may get 15 or 10% of your body weight. And to put it in perspective, I did actually a study on the Thinsulin program based on this method, and I presented at a poster a couple of years ago, and the average weight loss there after 87 days was about 10.8%. So if you look at someone who's 220 pounds, you know, losing that much will take them under 200 pounds already in less than 90 days,
right,
of being on this program.
So you just mentioned the active phase. So let's just explain to listeners that the program and the book are split into two phases. The first is the active phase, which talks about how we can gain control of and lower our insulin levels through food choices. And then the second phase is what you call the passive phase, which sets us up for, and this is key, it sets us up for long-term success. Because let's be honest, many of us can lose weight, but we can't keep it off, and we get into that yo-yo situation, which is not good for us, right?
Absolutely. Yes. If we cover the active phase for a second, and then we go to the passive phase afterward.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why we break this up is that we actually know this the physiology. No matter what you do, your body will fight. As soon as you lose weight, it doesn't know why you're losing weight. It doesn't know that there's a famine out there, there's a drought, right?
Right.
Or whatever reason, it's going to fight and it's going to win. That's why no matter what program you go on, right, you will plateau. You will get stuck. We all been there, done that, right?
Right.
So during that time, wouldn't it make sense that if you know you only have a certain amount of time, wouldn't you want to maximize that? It's not going to be forever. Some people think, oh, this is such a diet. It's so strict. But they realize, you know, what they fail to realize is that if they think this is a diet, they think in terms of diet, they're already setting themselves up for failure. Because in a diet, what do we have to do? We have to punish ourselves. Be very punitive in suffering and starving. And then after that, we have to reward ourselves. And then once we reward ourselves, we feel so guilty, right? They didn't eat too much, right?
Right.
And we go through guilt, and then we have to punish ourselves again. This vicious cycle continues and only sets us up for failure. As opposed to insulin, this is more of a journey. You know, we reject the whole concept of dieting. We understand that this is a journey where we're going to look at, if I'm going to try to lose weight, I want to maximize this by lowering my insulin. Think in terms of insulin. If I'm going to be in the passive phase, since I already plateau anyway, you know, why do I have to continue eating exactly the same way to keep my insulin low? My body would not allow me to burn fat. So what my brother and I did was that we increased the insulin. That means you can have your rice, right? You can have certain enjoyments that you would have, rice, noodles, pasta, potato, all those stuff that normally would spike insulin, because we shift in the passive phase to increase that insulin level. But we do it in a way where you won't gain back the weight. How?
Okay.
Then in the active phase, you're eating five times a day. You're not starving. So you already are developing a new eating habit, and you're moving away from your old diet dieting, right, and to move your new habits. So when you go on the passive, you're able to increase your insulin but maintain your weight, since you're not able to lose weight anyway. Because your insulin level is higher, when your body resets and allows you to lose weight again, guess what? You can drop that insulin. You can manipulate your body's insulin and allow you to overcome that weight loss plateau.
Okay. So, well, let's look at this, because I think this is a great analogy you've used here to remind us what foods spike insulin, what we can and shouldn't, you know, what we should eat very cautiously, what we can eat in abundance, in moderation. We don't want to eat in abundance. But you've used the traffic light analogy. So the red stoplight, the amber stoplight, and the go light. So the things we should be very cautious about and not eat, because they will spike our insulin level, you say, even if we have one bite, one little tiny bite, it will spike our insulin level. Sweets, grains, and starches. Talk to us about that a little, if you would.
Yes. Yeah. No, thank you for laying it out. If I may explain a little bit more, right? So the whole idea here is that we want to lower insulin in the active phase. Let's say you're starting this, right, Vicky? You're going to start the next day or today even, right? Say, okay, my goal now is to lower insulin.
Right.
But there's thousands of food out there. There's the internet, right? There's so much information, so what I say, misinformation out there, it becomes so confusing, so daunting
right. For
us to really take. So this is the cognitive behavior therapy that it took me a while to really be able to incorporate. I already incorporate in there. You don't have to do it. If you do this, you're already doing the behavioral therapy, okay? So it's easy. You look at the food that you want. Let me take a salad, for example. Everybody thinks a salad is healthy. But in insulin, what you do is you break down the salad, what you see, into five groups. Sweet, grain, vegetable, fruit, and protein. So in that salad, you see chicken. That's a protein, right? You group it in there. You see arugula, spinach. You see broccoli. You see carrots and corn. All those are vegetables. And I see croutons, right? That will be a grain. And the dressing is sweet, raspberry dressing. That's sweet, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I see dried cranberry. Those are fruit. So by grouping on those five, then the next step I do is that what color light? Red, yellow, or green, right? Those food groups belong in. By grouping it, then it's easier for me to not make any mistakes at all. So I will look at the red. Red is exactly what you see in the red, right, when you see a traffic light. Stop. Even a little bite of this will spike your insulin. It's not about and how much, how little, right, or how good, how bad. It's the reality. If you eat a bite of sweet ice cream, cake, cookies, ice cream, that will cause your blood sugar to rise, and your pancreas will produce insulin, right, spike that insulin to bring it down. There's no question about that. That's a scientific fact. Likewise, you know, if you eat rice, the noodles, grains, right, the grains will definitely increase that. But what people don't realize, even brown rice, even wheat bread, will cause a spike in insulin. They may say, wait a minute, Dr. Nguyen, I always hear this, right? But it's so healthy for you. Are you saying it's not? I never said that. But the question I want to ask them is, do healthy grains spike in insulin? And I give you this example that you would never forget. You know, we all know, we all see people with beer bellies, right? Beer is made out of grains, right, hops, and barley. Still spike insulin, cause your body to store fat in the belly. That's why you see a beer belly. But have you ever seen a wine belly? Never. Because wine is made out from a low glycemic index fruit, right? Which
right.
is a grape. So that's actually a yellow that we will cover in a second. So sweet grains and starchy vegetables. With starchy vegetables, if you see a vegetable, these are the only four you have to avoid. So I'll give you a sing-song rap to remember. I'm not a good rapper, okay? But I'm going to try my best.
Okay, okay. We'll okay. rap with you. Come on.
Potato, corn, carrots, and beets. These are the veggies you cannot eat. So if you see a vegetable, you see potato, corn, carrots, and beets, don't eat those because those will spike your insulin. So when I look at that salad, right, the croutons is a grain, right? I would mm-hmm. take that out. That's red. And I see corns and carrots. Remember those are the arugula and the broccoli and the lettuce is okay. But the corns and carrots will spike my insulin. So I leave it aside. That would be the red. You know, so moving on to that, then the green is exactly what it says. It would not spike insulin, so go ahead, have as much as you want. Actually, there's no moderation here. Eat until you're full because you do not want to starve. But you have to eat minimum your fist size. You can eat a whole chicken if you want, but minimum your fist size because these foods lower insulin. Not even spike it, it will lower your insulin. These are green leafy vegetables such as kale, spinach, asparagus, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of Asian vegetables like bok choy, ang choy, right? All those are really high in fiber, right?
Right.
Doesn't spike insulin at all. All the proteins. Of course, when I say proteins, I'm not like the paleo or Atkins where you can have bacon and, you know, skin and all that. Just use common sense. Of course, chicken and fish and turkey, right, and seafood are always much healthier. And if you eat eggs, just eat the egg white. Don't eat the yolk. And you can have as much egg white as you want. But don't, you know, just don't eat the yolk at all. So the last thing is the yellow. Yellow, be very cautious. You know, because if you eat more than your fist size, which is your portion, it will spike your insulin. So there's three things that you have to really be cautious when you look at the yellow. Number one, that will be fruit. So there's a lot of low glycemic index fruits, but here the key here is keep it simple. Let me give you four. If it's not these four fruits, you know, then don't eat them because
okay.
it might spike your insulin. Apple, orange, grapes, and berries. Any type of berries, strawberry, blackberry, blueberries, you know, apple, orange, grapes, and berries. And try to eat them fresh, you know, instead of just dried, like the dried cranberries. Because when they dry it, right, they add a lot of sugar to it. Definitely that would spike your insulin. But if you eat a handful of grapes, handful of berries, an apple, and orange, just one total, not one of each, right?
Right,
it would
right.
not spike your insulin. Same thing with nuts. You know, nuts, only a handful. So you notice that the yellows really is your snack. Fruit is in the morning. Nuts is in the afternoon between lunch and dinner. We don't mix up that order, right? Simply because nuts will keep you full in the until dinner, and the fruit doesn't. And the last yellow is a dairy product. As you know, dairy, like milk, even skim milk can spike insulin, right? But plain yogurt or cottage cheese, or any other dairy product, then you can have them. Just have them in moderation, no more than your fist size. So this is why I always group them at breakfast time, because there's a lot of breakfast products that are dairy-based, right? So just don't eat dairy all over throughout the day, right, because you're going to lose track of it. So you keep the dairy, the yellow, right, in at breakfast, the fruits as a morning snack, and the nuts as an afternoon snack. It makes it easier. By doing this, you're forming a new eating habit, and then moving away from your bad habits of maybe skipping meals and not eating enough, right?
Right. Well, we've got like 1 minute left here. So it is very simple. You do break it down very simply in the book, but you give a lot of explanation. And I think that explanation really helped me to understand what's happening to my body when I do this or don't do it. So a final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with today?
Yes, if I may, go check out my website, www.thinfilmprogram.com. There's a video that really simplifies this. And if you have a chance, read the book, because that's what I'm going to give you. I'm going to give you, the book gives you plenty of knowledge and plenty of things for you to think about. Because I really believe, my brother and I, when we wrote this book, that if we don't change the conversation from calories, right, from dieting and from calories to insulin, to thin insulin, then I don't think we would be able to reverse the obesity epidemic that we're seeing right now.
Well, Dr. So, Charles Nguyen, I thank you so much for being with us and sharing your expertise. It is a very interesting read. And the website, again, is thethinsulinprogram.com. Is that correct?
Yes, thinsulinprogram.com.
Thank you.
Thank you, Vicky. Thank you to all your listeners. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you. And the book, again, is called The Thinsulin Program. It's the breakthrough solution to help you lose weight and stay thin. And as Dr. Charles Nguyen said, focus on insulin, not calories. Check it out. It's really interesting. Please do stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Do something different with your spare time. Give baby animals at Paws a fresh start. With the assistance of caring volunteers, Paws helps hundreds of orphaned and sick kittens and puppies each year. Join us and save lives. Become a Paws foster care volunteer. For more information, visit paws.org or 425-787-2500. Paws.org or 425-787-2500.
Next week on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, we explore two great races. Debbie Clark Motterow shares experiences from Fast Into the Night, a woman, her dogs, and their journey north on the Iditarod Trail. And Kat Bigney traces our ancestry across the earth in the National Geographic Channel's epic new series, The Great Human Race. Tune in every Monday at noon Pacific time right here on Alternative Talk 1150 and catch up with podcasts at conversationslive.net.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes, and you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org, but you're probably not going to, are you? Kids, work, listening to the radio. You're busy, which is great because busy people can't get prediabetes. Oh my, I read that wrong. They can.
Should have worn my glasses.
So visit doihaveprediabetes.org and take a short test, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
The Launchpad Radio Show is having a blast every Wednesday morning from 8 to 9 on 1150 AM KKNW. Join the Launchpad crew as they introduce new startups and upcoming projects that make a profound impact on our community and interview the people that are pioneering these innovative ideas. Get a boost from the Launchpad Radio Show every Wednesday morning from 8 to 9 AM. We're serving launch for breakfast.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Join us live every Monday at noon on Alternative Talk 1150 or stream live from conversationslive.net.
Spread the word. You don't have to settle for the usual talk radio. Now there's Alternative Talk 1150 AM.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. Well, if you're looking for a new job and the thought of interviewing brings you out in hives, we've got a great guest to help you get through that stress and bring you closer to getting a yes from the hiring manager. He is Ron Fry. He's the founder and president of the now 30-year-old Career Press. He's been an acknowledged authority, frequent speaker, and popular seminar leader on a variety of job search topics at schools and associations nationwide, including Harvard University, the Center for Communication, and many more. And the books we're going to talk about today, we have a 25th anniversary edition of 101 Great Answers to the Toughest Interview Questions. And in fourth edition, we have 101 Smart Questions to Ask on Your Interview, both written by Ron Fry. Ron Fry, welcome.
Thank you, Vicki. Great to be with you.
And good to have you here, because I think this is, you know, something that often puts people off looking for a new job is actually going through the interview process. And you've written two, they're quite small books here. I'll hold them up for people who are watching on streaming camera here, but they're quite small, but they are so packed with really great information.
Thank you so much.
And so, you know, I've interviewed thousands of people over the years, and I've had my fair share of interviews, and I just thought these were awesome books. So let's begin with what I think is, people are often asked this. Let's first of all look at the 101 Great Answers to the Toughest Interview Questions. And I've been asked this many times myself, and I think, personally, it's a sign of a lazy or inexperienced interviewer, but I'd like to get your opinion on it. And that's when somebody, you sit down and you meet somebody for the first time and they just sit back in their chair and say, tell me about yourself. How should we respond to that?
You know, I guarantee that it's going to be one of the first three questions. And I think you're right. Sometimes it is just laziness. Sometimes it's more of an icebreaker, you know, that they may have a great list of questions that they are ready to ask, but they want to give you a chance to sort of slowly get into the interview before the knives come out. What usually happens is if you haven't prepared something, and it doesn't mean that you have to memorize it and have, you know, 5 minutes of your autobiography ready to roll out, but if you haven't prepared something, you hem and haw, you start with, well, I was born. And 10 minutes later, you're talking about your kindergarten success. What they really want to know is, can you do the job? You know, what qualifies
right.
you to be there? And it gives you a chance to start right out being positive, showing them your enthusiasm and your attitude. So don't shove it aside. Expect that it's going to come probably right from the very beginning, and just be ready to highlight why you're there, why you're the best candidate for the job, and what you've done that backs that up.
Right. Now, you've broken the book down into just a lot of really good advice and then into questions that you're likely to be asked and how to respond to them. One, as an interviewer myself, one of the things that where people have fallen down often for me is when I've asked them why they left their last job or questions about their last job. And you know, some negativity has come up. So can we look at this for a little bit? Because I think you've got some great questions in here. You know, what do you feel an employer owes an employee? I've never been asked or asked that question myself, but that's a great question. How should people respond to that?
Well, I think it's a great question if you're asking it. I hate it if I were the interviewee, because that question in particular requires that you've done some research. You better know something about that company. You better know something about the culture before you just blithely answer that kind of question. You know, the main rule of interviewing when you're sitting there is you don't ever want to introduce a negative. You want to show how positive and enthusiastic and energetic you are. So a good interviewer is automatically going to screw you up by introducing a negative. Tell me about the worst failure you ever had. Tell me about the biggest mistake you ever made. Or then they'll get really personal and nasty. Tell me about your last boss who you didn't get along with. It becomes more and more difficult to stay positive in those kinds of situations, but that's really what you have to do. And the better the interviewer and the more experienced sometimes, the more negative questions they'll keep throwing at you. If you can make it through those kinds of negative questions, you're way ahead of a lot of candidates.
Right. And the secret really is to take a negative situation but try and put a positive spin on it, right?
Well, we've all done it. You know, everybody knows that when you're asked what's your greatest weakness, you don't say, well, you know, I just can't get up in the morning, or I just don't really like working very hard. Is it okay if I only work 3 days a week? They're not really looking for truth. But at the same time, I think everyone's gotten tired of, well, my greatest weakness is I just work too hard,
mm-hmm.
or I just take on too much myself. The key when you're asked any kind of question about failure or weakness or whatever is you have to make absolutely sure that whatever you're admitting to isn't a job requirement. You know, if you say, my greatest weakness is that I just don't like working with other people, and the job that you're going for requires team building skills, you just kind of shot yourself in the foot.
Right, right. There are tricky questions, I think, that can, you know, make somebody jump and say, yes, I want to hire this person, or, oh, no, this isn't the person for us. A couple of those might be, are you a risk taker? Do you want my job? Things that are, you know, there's no real right or wrong answer to. So let's look at risk taking. If somebody asks you, are you a risk taker? I mean, that's really, to me, depends on the situation and the circumstances at that time. But how? What are they looking for there, Ron?
Well, you actually hit the nail right on the head. And that's why it's so important to prepare. If you don't know a lot about the company and a lot about the culture, whenever they start asking specific questions really about personality types or the way you work, you're not going to be able to answer it. If you're in a bank and you're interviewing to be an auditor and they ask, are you a risk taker? Trust
me, they don't want
the answer to be yes. You know, if you're a bond trader or a stockbroker, they might not want you to be quite that ready to send millions down the drain. So the preparation and learning what the culture is, learning about your boss, which is certainly possible these days over social media. Everybody has a Facebook page. It's easy enough to find out all kinds of things about the person you're actually interviewing with, and that can only help.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about social media, because I worked with somebody last year. We went to great lengths to secure him. He was a brilliant videographer. I won't say any more, but we tried really hard to get him on our team. We finally got him on our team. And then unbeknownst to us, the client involved was a devout Mormon and checked his Facebook page and found that he'd been partying all week and said he had to go or we were going to lose the project. It can get that serious at times. So talk to us a little bit about social media and where people are falling down on that.
Well, I think, you know, I have a 27-year-old daughter who, proudly enough, is now in medical school. But I've spent a lot of time with her and her friends and as they were growing up. And I really feel for the whole millennial generation, because unlike anybody even in their 30s or 40s, these guys grew up basically with a cell phone pasted to their ear. When someone texts, it virtually seems to demand an answer within 10 seconds. And if you make a mistake anywhere, somebody is taking a picture and posting it to the entire wide world. So what we used to be able to do was essentially exist in a cocoon. If we did something really stupid, people in Ghana didn't find out about it 15 seconds later. And there weren't so many photos being posted everywhere, and Instagrams and smart photos and everything else. So you have to really be careful and realize that you are now a public person, whether you want to be or not.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a Facebook page and it features you and all of your friends with beer cans galore, whether or not you're still in college, maybe worse if you're 20 years out of college, most employers now are checking out Facebook. They're checking out they're checking out every kind of site they can. They're trying to find out about who you are and what you do, whether or not that's something that they really deserve to know. So if you haven't scrubbed your social media pages, if you're constantly tweeting things specifically, say, about the Republican debates, and you make it very obvious that you're an ultra-liberal Democrat, well, you know what? Your employer really couldn't be asking all about that. But if you volunteer it and announce it to the world, suddenly it becomes his business.
Right, right. Well, I want to talk, we don't have a great deal of time, unfortunately. I want to talk about 101 smart questions to ask on your interview, because here's the thing where I think many people may miss a great opportunity, because an interview is not a one-way process. This is to determine also, do you want to work for this company? Do you want to work for this group? Do you want to work for this person or with this person? And so you've got this I love at the back that you've put an appendix of all the smart questions to ask, and there are pages of questions you should ask yourself and the person you're interviewing, you know, apropos. But let's look at questions we should ask our new boss. What are your top two favorites that we should ask our new boss?
My top two. One would be, what's your management philosophy? You know, let's find out if this person is a Simon Legree or a cream puff. You know, if, if they start telling you that their idea is to rule by fear, you should be very, very afraid. It depends on how the interview's been going, but I really love asking a question like, tell me about the last time you had a disagreement with one of your employees or you had a disagreement with your boss. What happened? How did it turn out? What did you do? As you ask questions essentially about how they respond in circumstances, whether they want to or not, they're really revealing their personality. They're revealing the kind of person they are and the way they operate. And that's what you need to know. You really don't want to be surprised when you walk through the door that first day. We've all been in situations where, whether we like it or not, we don't have a choice. We need a job, any job, and while we may really wish to have one that we're going to be happy at and feel fulfilled, that might not be in the cards. But when we are in the position where we're looking for a promotion, we're looking for a new position with more responsibility, and we have enough credentials, we have enough background, where we might actually be a viable candidate in a number of places, then, as you said, asking these kinds of questions, finding out where's the company going, what kind of new products or services are they coming up with, hey, how have they been doing in the stock market? If their stock price has gone down 50% in the last year, guess what? This is not a growth company right now. You better be very careful, since last hired is first fired.
Right. Well, I love chapters 6 and 7, questions to close the sale, questions to get the best deal. Absolutely packed full of really great information for anybody who's seriously looking for a new job and wants to make sure it's a good fit for them, too. A very quick final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with, Ron.
Well, biggest one of all, don't bring up salary first. Even if you're absolutely desperate and want to make sure that you get top dollar, the earlier you bring up salary, the worse it is for you.
Right.
As you said, you did a lot of interviews. I've done a lot of interviewing of people. And one of the questions we're really trying to get the answer to is, how much are you going to cost me? And if you reveal too early that you're out of my league, that you want a lot more money than I can afford, you haven't convinced me yet that I should hire you at all, but you just convinced me that I can't afford you, and the interview is going to be over.
Yeah.
Likewise, if you come in too cheap, I'm chortling there, and I might give you a shot, even though you aren't perfect, but I'm going to pay you $20,000 less than you could have gotten because you told me I could.
Right. So the answer is, get these two books first, 101 Great Answers to the Toughest Interview Questions and 101 Smart Questions to Ask on Your Interview, both written by Ron Fry. Ron Fry, thank you so much for being with us today. Appreciate
Great
it very
being
much.
With you, Vicki. Thank you.
And please do stay tuned. We will be right back with The Hook. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Let's see if I guess that this just isn't working.
Knowing you have a great idea for a book is one thing, writing it another. So what's stopping you? Maybe you can't find time. Maybe you don't know where to begin. Maybe you wrote a couple of chapters, then disappeared down a rabbit hole. Or maybe you'd rather someone else write it for you. Partnering with the right coach or ghostwriter can make all the difference between talking about your book and finishing your book. As an award-winning writer and strategic consultant, Vicki St. Clair's storytelling credits span from business, health, self-help, and memoir to New York Times and USA Today best-selling anthologies. Vicki partners with people just like you, at the exact level you need, whether you need a little encouragement, editorial guidance, or full-blown ghostwriting and consulting services. If you're serious about telling the story you know is inside you, stop procrastinating. Let's get your story down on paper. Contact Vicki today. Email Vicki at VickiSt.Clair.com or call 1-800-495-7617. See more about Vicki and her work at VickiSt.Clair.com.
Oh, yeah, that could work. This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to NuPro Supplements, we cover the world of animals. This week, February 21st, it's our encore presentation of Animal World and our last short show of the month. We'll rerun our Valentine's Day show, honoring and sharing our love for the elephants. Aline Fortgang from Friends of Woodland Park Zoo Elephants joins us. We share what we know about Chai's sudden death and my concerns for Bamboo. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 to 10:30 a.m. right here on Alternative Talk, a.m. 1150.
All right, everybody in the car, let's go.
What are we going to do first when we get there, Mom? Go for a hike?
Sure.
What about canoeing? Can we go canoeing, too?
I don't see why.
How long does it take to get to the forest?
It's not that far, sweetie.
Are we there yet?
Yep, we're here.
Already?
It's a short drive from your neighborhood to your naturehood. Visit discovertheforest.org to find a neighborhood park or green space near you. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the U.S. Forest Service.
Next week on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, we explore two great races. Debbie Clark Motterow shares experiences from Fast Into the Night, a woman, her dogs, and their journey north on the Iditarod Trail. And Kat Bigney traces our ancestry across the earth in the National Geographic Channel's epic new series, The Great Human Race. Tune in every Monday at noon Pacific time right here on Alternative Talk 1150 and catch up with podcasts at conversationslive.net.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicki St. Clair.
Notice anything different? You should. There's no other station like Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And we're ending today's show with The Hook, how to share your brand's unique story to engage customers, boost sales, and achieve heartfelt success. My guest is Richard Krevlin. He is, he's taught undergraduate and graduate classes at USC, UCLA, University of Georgia, Emerson and Pepperdine, and his consulting work has affected hundreds of TV commercials produced all over the world, many of which have won awards. He's consulted with companies such as Nestle, Google, and Nike, and smaller businesses too. And he's taken all he's learned from his time telling stories in Hollywood to the business world in this book, The Hook. And I'd like to bring him on right now. Richard Krevlin, welcome.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, very pleased to have you. Great book, some great examples. I love you've used so many examples in this book to explain what you're talking about, because I think it really helps people get the picture. But I'm really curious. Let's go back a little bit and let's just talk about how you evolved from a veteran film professor into a business communications and sales consultant. I can see the transition there, but maybe some people can't. So tell us how that happened for you.
Oh, I guess it wasn't really kicking and screaming, but it was a little bit fluky. I'd written a book called Screenwriting from the Soul, and was teaching at USC Film School, and all of my clients were aspiring playwrights and novelists and screenwriters. And then one day I got an invitation for a free dinner at Spago's with the global head of marketing for Unilever Hair Care. And so I said, sure, I'm a bald guy, so I don't know that much about hair care. But I'd love to have dinner with you. And, basically he said, look, the majority of all of our communication is based upon beautiful women flipping their hair in slow motion, not working anymore. We have to tell real stories about real women with real hair problems. We wanted to go to Hollywood and find a Hollywood story expert. Can you help us do this and do it in under 30 seconds in a TV commercial? And that was really the first time I started thinking about
do these rules that I've dedicated my life to understanding about narrative and storytelling, do these rules apply when you aren't doing a two-hour feature film? The more I thought about it, it's harder to do it in 30 seconds, but they're the same rules, and a good story is a good story. I mean, if you look at the Super Bowl, a lot of times those ads were 30 or 60 seconds, and there's some great stories there that can have you crying in 30 seconds. So definitely possible, but definitely not easy as well.
Right. Well, it is more of a challenge, but it's kind of an exciting challenge to be able to tell your story in such a short period of time.
Yeah.
Because I cross over into that storytelling too. So for our show, for this segment here, I wanted to focus on something that you call Professors K. I'm just going to find the page here. Just lost it. Dropped the book. Here we are.
The Golden Rule of Story.
Yeah, the Golden Rule of Story. What? Tell us about that.
Well, for years, as I said, I was a film professor and teaching screenwriting classes. And every semester I get a group of writers who needed to write a full-length feature script, and they'd have 15 weeks, and they'd start with an idea. At the end of those 15 weeks, they had to have a finished script. And I started asking them questions and realizing every semester I was essentially doing the same thing, asking the same questions. And it seemed like the stories that worked always followed this same basic rule. An engaging character actively overcomes tremendous obstacles to reach a desirable goal. And if you start, you can really take that. I say it's non-negotiable. You have to do all aspects of that sentence. And you can apply it to any film or any story, really. And if we don't find the character engaging, if they aren't actively pursuing a goal, if we don't want them to achieve that goal, we're not going to want to keep watching.
Right.
And that kind of became my formula.
Right. Now, we both work in branding communications, and you probably hear this as much as I do, that, you know, a company wants to tell a story, but they don't understand what story is. They think it's all about them. But, you know, the customer's not always interested in that. So let's look at what you call developing the development process, the three-step narrative, and how we start putting story together. And you say, build with a single sentence, begin with a single sentence, which in film, of course, is your log line. So talk to us a little bit about that, if you would.
Yeah, I think a lot of times we try to do too much. What the single sentence is a way to force the client or the storyteller to crystallize in this situation exactly what is this story you want to tell. And if you think about, you know, the great movies, the great books, you know, they're clear stories about a single individual. Now, sometimes that individual, I mean, you take Tony Soprano isn't a nice human being, but he's a compelling human being, and we want to watch him with, you know, can he navigate his career as a mafia boss and without losing his family? You know, so that's the core idea there, and then you spin it out through this development process, and then you can turn that into a narrative about your product or about the founder of your company, or about a consumer. So in all directions, it's still essentially the same. If we don't engage and care about the main character in your story and we're not rooting for them to achieve their goal, we're not going to keep listening to that story.
Right. And I can think of some commercials on TV where I could care less about their characters. And one of them, I'm just going to throw this out there, was Geico when they did the cavemen adverts. They were hugely successful, but I did not like those prehistoric guys they were putting on there. I didn't care about them. So that advert didn't work for me.
Yeah, and I guess that skews towards a kind of a 20 to 30-year-old male demographic. You know, and there are a lot of examples. People always question me. They go, you know, most of the TV commercials we see aren't story-driven. most times they're what I call premise-driven. So that's, you know, these cavemen are just this, it's a silly idea. The famous one is the What's Up commercial for beer. You know, and all the guys, there's no story. It's a bunch of guys sitting there just saying, what's up to each other.
Right.
And so when you're dealing with such a short period of time, you can get away with that. And I think that's proof. The cavemen worked. It didn't engage all target markets, but for the target demographic, it worked. It got young people thinking about insurance. Then when they tried to spin it into a 30-minute TV show, it failed miserably.
Oh, so, I didn't know they tried to do that.
That's why, because it died really fast.
Yeah.
So you're absolutely right in that sometimes we can get away with things in 30 seconds that just can't hold us for a longer period of time. And that's what you see on, you know, on social media. So much of the videos there, too, also aren't true narratives. You know, it's a video about a puppy falling into a pool. I mean, there's really no story there, but it's got millions of hits because it's cute.
Right, right. But
then when you're really trying to connect emotionally on a long-term basis and improve your brand equity, you really want to reconsider longer, more interesting, more well-crafted narratives that speak to people that you want to connect with and have a thematic and emotional impact that you're looking for based upon a deep understanding of your brand.
Right. Well, we only have 2 minutes left here. There's so much information in this book. I wish we could. We wish we had longer to talk about it. But, you know, basically, whether you want this for personal reasons, whether you're a freelancer, if you're applying for a new job, we just talked about that in the previous segment. You know, whether you work for a corporation in communications or sales, it's all about story. And of course, now visual storytelling is leading the way. Video, but there are some really appalling videos up there. So I wonder, in just the short time we have here, if you could give us your two top tips for creating good video that tells your story.
Well, you know, they say that the number one thing to keep in mind is authenticity and credibility. If you're creating a video that people can smell is inauthentic, it could actually hurt your brand more than help your brand. And secondly, I think, you know, less is more. The shorter, the better with the storytelling. A visual storytelling, we can convey tremendous information visually.
Right.
So it's a real challenge today to differentiate yourself in the marketplace through video, but no one's really talking about production value anymore. You don't have to have millions of dollars to create video.
An iPhone will do it.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah. Well, Professor Richard,
sorry,
we're cutting over one another there. We're right at the end of our segment, and I really appreciate you being with us today. I know listeners can find out more about you at powerstoryconsulting.com, and the book is called The Hook, How to Share Your Brand's Unique Story to Engage Customers, Boost Sales, and Achieve Heartfelt Success. I think this is for anybody who's out there in the workplace, quite honestly. It's got some great examples in there. And I thank you for being with us, Richard. Appreciate your time today.
Well, thank you for having me.
And again, the website is powerstoryconsulting.com. And before we go today, I just want to very quickly let you know that next week we're talking with somebody who raced in the Iditarod. Her book is called Fast Into the Night, A Woman, Her Dogs, and Their Journey North on the Iditarod Trail. And she's actually coming up to Seattle on next Monday. Today, Monday the 15th, she's at Lake Forest Park, and in Bellingham, she'll be there tomorrow at Village Books. So any questions on that, you can reach me at 800-495-7617, 800-495-7617. You can also email me at info@conversationslive.net. Find us on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair and on Facebook at Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And if you had any questions on any of today's guests, feel free to ping me. I'm happy to fill in the blanks and send you websites, etc. All right, that's it. Until next week, live well, live strong.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.